Well, thank you very much, Heidi, and thanks to all of you. Good morning, good afternoon. It's been exactly a year since we set out our revised strategy for Standard Chartered Bank. I think during that year we've made some really very strong progress on a number of fronts. We set out to strengthen our balance sheet, to improve our risk management capabilities, to become a much more efficient operation, building productivity into everything that we do. We also sought to invest substantially in our business, both to improve our control environment, but also to invest in our future, to recognize the potential that we believe continues to be very much at the heart of Standard Chartered, but which we have not yet fully realized. So as we reflect on our progress over the past year, we have accomplished much of the early work that we thought we would in the first year. Also recognize that this is a three-year process. We have much more to do on all of the fronts that we mentioned. So we're continuing to strengthen and improve our balance sheet. We're continuing to manage our expenses and become more efficient and more productive in everything that we do. And while we've seen some improvement in our bottom line and a steady improvement in the quality of our balance sheet and our capital strength, we know that we have much more to go, both in terms of our own efficiency measures, but also in terms of driving income growth. We remain convinced, though, that the strategy that we set out a year ago is the right one for our bank. We continue to feel and experience some headwinds in terms of the macroeconomic environment, although there are some signs of stability at the same time. The core mission for Standard Chartered is to put clients back at the heart of everything that we do. By doing that, and against the backdrop of a fundamentally stronger bank and a stronger organization, with the key pieces of the organization just coming into place over the past couple of months, that we will be able to drive the income and profit performance to which we aspired when we set out our strategy a year ago. So we'll have some time at the end of these prepared comments to get into Q&A, and I'll save color for then, but I'll hand over to Andy now, who can give us some detail on what we released in our IMS a bit less than an hour ago.
Thank you, Bill. Hopefully by now you've had a chance to quickly read the statement that we put out a brief while ago. So I'd just like to spend a few minutes drawing out some of the key points before we take questions. So starting with income, we delivered the same level of income in the third quarter as we did in the second. In fact, exactly the same income, despite difficult external conditions. So this continues the stable trend that we saw in the first half and is a significant improvement, evidentially, from the sequential declines of 2015. On costs, we continued the underlying cost discipline throughout the third quarter. This created the opportunity to invest, and that is the reason largely for the small increase quarter on quarter, but very much in line with our guidance, and cost run rate was similar to that in the first half. Putting aside quarterly fluctuations, regulatory costs are annualizing at just over $1 billion. And of course, in the fourth quarter, not third quarter, we'll have the UK bank levy, which we currently estimate to be around $400 million. In terms of credit quality, that remained broadly stable in the third quarter. Loan impairments down quarter on quarter and year on year, but remain elevated relative to long-term averages. The overall gross non-performing loans remained broadly stable, also slightly up in the ongoing business, slightly down in the liquidation portfolio. Market conditions remain challenging in corporate institutional banking business particularly, so we do remain vigilant. You should bear in mind that the fourth quarter is the longest quarter, and therefore books remain open until just prior to the full year results announcement. But on retail banking, commercial banking, both of them saw quarter-on-quarter improvements in credit quality, which was encouraging. So taken as a whole, the bank generated the third consecutive quarter of underlying profit before tax, which at $458 million was practically the same as in the immediately previous quarter. As Bill said, we're making progress on restructuring actions. We took a further $141 million charge in the third quarter, largely relating to adjustments concerning the liquidation portfolio. We still expect a charge of around $3 billion in total, although, as we said in the statement, it's unlikely we'll incur all of that by the end of 2016. Since the end of the quarter, we have fairly significantly reduced the liquidation portfolio without incurring additional restructuring charges. So the $20 billion of risk-weighted assets that we set out to reduce as of today, we have now reduced 70% of that number. And that is going to give us in the fourth quarter, alongside some of the other restructuring actions, a CET1 benefit of about 50 basis points. Turning to the balance sheet, the group remained well capitalized and highly liquid. So the CET1 ratio was broadly flat at 13%, remained at the top end of 12 to 13% range. If you're wondering why the ratio fell when we generated a small positive PBT and reduced RWAs, it's because those benefits plus currency translation and available for sale gains were offset by model and methodology changes, the non-tax deductibility principal finance losses, AT1 distributions and provisions for payable dividends. So a number of factors in there, not individually big, but that's where we've stayed at the top of the range. We believe being at the top of the range is the right place to be, given there is still some regulatory uncertainty, particularly in the Basel IV and IFRS 9 spaces. Finally, just like to highlight one or two examples of momentum that we are seeing in the business as of now. Firstly, we're seeing a significant increase in digital mobile banking adoption. This progress is actually recognized in the Global Finance recent awards, where the bank was voted best digital bank in 15 of our markets, which is good to see. Second, we recently obtained approval in China to become the first commercial bank to be authorized to issue special drawing rights, a good example of how we are innovating to stay at the forefront of the development and internationalization of the renminbi. And finally, our efforts to maximize our wealth management capabilities continue. Just this morning, for example, we have completed our planned partnership with Manulife in Hong Kong that will enable us to optimize the management of our clients' mandatory provident fund investments and ultimately offer them the best value propositions that they can get. So to summarize, conditions for our clients in the period and therefore the bank did remain tough, and we expect those conditions to continue. But against this backdrop, we have been executing on our strategy and delivering income, profit, and balance sheet stability. So building on those stronger foundations to improve the performance is the management's absolute top priority going forward. So with that, I'd like to hand back to Heidi so that we can take your questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. If you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be taken by the operator. Please stand by while we compile the Q&A queue. This will take a few moments. If you wish to cancel your request, please press the hash key. Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone. Your first question comes from the line of Ronit Ghose from Citi. Please ask your question.
Great, thank you. It's Ronit from Citi. I just wanted to pick up on a couple of points on the balance sheet on capital and asset quality. The guidance of 50 basis points extra in the fourth quarter, is that a combination of the $13 billion RWA reduction plus plus the existing restructuring guidance that you've given us, or is there anything else in that 50 basis point number? And is it, should we really be thinking about it as that RWA reduction, or are there going to be any kind of provision releases or any other write-backs on that? The second question is on deposits. You've seen and you've talked about in your release quite a nice deposit increase in the quarter. How much of these are non-interest-bearing or CASA deposits? I'm just wondering, are we sort of, by building up, it's a good thing you're building up deposits, but given it's still in such a lower-rate world, are we just creating another margin headwind there? And the final one is more of a philosophical question. When you think about going back to dividend payments, it may be still too early a question to ask, but we made a statutory loss in the third quarter and probably in the fourth quarter as well. How do you think about the, or how does the board think about framing the dividend question right now? Do we need to be solidly, your capital ratios are going to be, you know, well above your 12 to 13% go-to number. So I'm just wondering if you can give us some more color around that. Thank you.
Yeah, let's just sort of pick those up in order. So the 50 basis points of envisaged increase in CET1 in the fourth quarter will be a combination of things that we have just done with reducing the liquidation portfolio, plus things that are in progress on the restructuring front. Put those together, and we think it will be about 50 basis points of uplift. But just put this in context, when we announced the restructuring charge of $3 billion, we said overall we thought it would be fairly neutral. We had taken sort of 50 basis points of hits on that over the last year. The 50 basis points that will sort of unwind in the fourth quarter is coming back fairly close to a point of neutrality. What we have realized subsequent to the end of the period, and we've included it in here, you know, it's reasonably significant. Of the original 20 billion RWAs of liquidation portfolio that had gone down to 19 at the end of the third quarter, this is reducing that by 13. So essentially, we're down to 6 of the 20. So 30% to go, 70% is now out of the way. And to, I think, a subset of your question, we have done that reduction without any particular impact on the provisioning that we have put in place earlier on. So we have been settling at roughly where we envisage the settlements actually going. So secondly, on deposits, yes, you know, we have slightly increased the level of deposits in the period. There are a variety of different sources of that, but certainly there has been a big focus in the CASA area, and we are very mindful that wherever we can, we are improving the deposits at the sort of more quality end, where we are still paying pretty good rates for the CASA sort of front. And in the TB space, we have also increased levels of deposits there. So there's not any one specific, but there has been a big focus, to your point, on making sure that it is a cost-effective route that we are going, and that the quality of those deposits is as good as we can achieve. In terms of dividend, and we said the board will look at this later in the year. Obviously, there's a number of moving parts here. We want to make sure the capital levels are sufficient. 13%, 50 basis points to come on the restructuring. Conversely, we still wait to see exactly where things like Basel IV are going to end up, and IFRS 9 to some extent. So there are still some uncertainties out there. We clearly want to make sure that the business performance, momentum, sustainability of that is okay. So this is only a quarterly update. No decisions on things like dividends at this stage. We'll take a look in the round later on with the board and decide where we should go.
Great. Thanks, Andy. Just to go back to that first question on the 50 bips, I mean, if I just took $13 billion out of my model, that would be around 50 bips, 60 bips. So I'm just wondering what else is going on, because it looks like I can get 50 bips just off the $13 billion.
Well, you've got to remember that there's EL adjustments as well that sort of go on behind the scenes. So, you know, there's a number of factors that are that contribute to that. But if you put them all together, it's of the order of 50 bips.
Okay, thanks.
Your next question comes from the line of Rohith Chandrarajan from Barclays. Please ask your question.
Hi, good morning. I'd just like to explore the revenue outlook a little bit, please, given that revenue growth was, I guess, one of the clear areas that you signaled that would be needed to raise returns. We've obviously had three quarters of stability now. Just wondering what you see as the required market conditions for revenue to generate revenue growth, and any particular initiatives that you're taking that you'd like to highlight that might deliver that, and the timescales. And then just in detail on the 3Q, loans flat, just wondering what the positives and negatives within that were. And then also the financial markets business hasn't really benefited, I guess, from the stronger market conditions that we've seen in the third quarter, particularly in FIC. Wondered if you could talk about that a little bit as well, please.
Yeah, I'll make a couple of comments. Andy will chime in as well. Underneath the relatively flat income post the period of five quarters of decline, there's obviously some pluses and minuses. And the things into which we've invested and are really focusing on driving growth for the future are generating growth. So retail up 2%, private banking up 3%, obviously normalizing for the insurance settlement that we had in the second quarter. Transaction banking is going well. CIB up 2% as well, and including financial markets, which is up 10% quarter on quarter. So there are plenty of signs of life underneath the surface. Obviously, those have been offset by some of the ongoing drags. We still have clearly year-on-year balance sheet drags from the de-risking and risk management exercises that we undertook at the end of last year, and including the progress that we made on the liquidation portfolio. Of course, until we put that portfolio together, there was substantial income on that portfolio. So we've offset the headwinds that are endemic and factored into our internal assessment, and we continue to have the external headwinds, as we've noted and as you've noted. In terms of what kind of improvement can we hope and expect without an improvement in the external environment, well, we would expect the trends that we've shown over the course of this year to continue. So the investments that we're making in Africa, in retail, in parts of our CIB business, the investments that we're making in private banking and wealth management are bearing fruit. And we would hope that as those investments bed down, that we could get an acceleration of the income growth in those areas. By the same token, we would expect that the drags, both year on year but also quarter to quarter, drags from the parts of our portfolio that have really lagged will recede through time. If we subsequently or alongside of that get a resumption of growth in global trade, so up to a level that's closer to the historical average, or even just get trade growth up in the vicinity of GDP growth, obviously we prefer that if we got to the historical trend of closer to 2x GDP growth, that would be very helpful. If we can get a pickup in cross-border investments, particularly investments into and out of our core markets and the emerging markets, that would be further helpful. We have capitalized on the very strong debt capital markets opportunities in the third quarter, and would obviously hope that could continue. That will be a key driver of our FICC business, as you say, but also the FX business, where having had some very good periods in the first and second quarter, we had a good third quarter, but without the real outperformance that we've seen and that we think that the franchise is capable of. So across that piece, we think that we're making the investments that will generate income growth in the quarters to come. We're seeing the early signs of that, and we look forward to a bit of acceleration together with a bit of recession from the drags that have held us back.
Okay, thank you. And could you comment on the flat loan book overall, if there's been positives and negatives within that?
There have been positives and negatives within that. It's absolutely accurate. Obviously, it reduced substantially both risk-weighted assets and loan balances since we laid out the strategy a year ago, having been in very slow growth before that. We I think, are happy with the stabilization of the balance sheet, ex the very deliberate de-risking activities that we've had around the liquidation portfolio, looking for opportunities to grow it. I think maybe the most important message is that we are truly and fully open for business. I mean, we are well capitalized. We're very liquid. We're not constrained by our own appetite for risk in any particular segment, in any particular geography, or overall as a group. It's really about getting our machine humming again after what's been a pretty tumultuous year.
Okay, thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Tom Rayner from Exane. Please ask your question.
Yes, good morning. Tom Rayner from Exane here. Could I just start on capital, and then I have a question on credit quality, if that's okay. On the capital, why is your Pillar 2A requirement going up, given that you're sort of de-risking and shrinking the size of the balance sheet? Second sort of capital related is, why have you decided not to call the pref in January? It's fairly normal, I think, to sort of call these things as they come due. So I wonder if there's any other issues, such as possible TLAC requirements behind your thinking. And then if there's any detail on the other headwinds you mentioned, I'm assuming Basel 4 and IFRS 9, but is there anything else there that we should be thinking about? And then I have a second question on credit quality, please.
Okay, Tom. So that was the first kind of question combined, was it?
Yeah, the capital question.
Okay, let's turn in that order. We have got a slight increase following the fairly regular reviews that the PRA do on the Pillar 2A. I think over time, if you look at different banks, different points and cycles, you know, there are different sort of changes that happen there from time to time. We're certainly not out of the pack on that. There's no particularly significant item in there. They obviously review that from time to time. They take account of what they've learned from prior year stress tests, from what they see in other banks, etc. You know, the numbers are sort of what the numbers are. But clearly, as you know, our target range is still well ahead of that, and where we are is at the top end of that range as well. So I just think it's something that bobbles around over a period of time, a bit higher now, but broadly in the pack. On the press, there's just one very simple answer, that the interest rate reset on the press is extremely attractive in essence will sort of halve the cost of the company going forwards, which over the 10-year period is a couple hundred million dollars of savings. So that is absolutely a driver of continuing with a very favorable instrument rather than calling it. Basel IV, IFRS 9, nothing really particular to add. I think you'll see the sort of external commentary about the intent that there be some no significant impact. Obviously, the devil is going to be the detail, and obviously there's a lot of discussion still going on the whole topic. So just genuinely really can't add very much. It is the reason why being slightly higher on the capital at the moment seems to be a good place to be. But until that is actually landed, we just won't know. IFRS 9 also, I think, as with most of the banks during the course of the next year, we'll be cranking stuff through lots of detailed models and we'll sort of know where we're at that. You know, we don't expect that to be a huge issue, but until we've done all the modelling on it, it's something that clearly, you know, we're keeping under review. We'll see where we get to during the course of next year.
Okay, thank you. Just on the credit quality, I mean, you sort of talked about sort of stable trends overall. You did mention that NPLs were picking up a bit in the ongoing business. I don't know if there's anything there further to add. But the thing I wanted to ask you about was the grade 12, because that does seem to be quite a big jump in the quarter, 23%, which obviously if you annualise that would raise questions about whether there'd be a big transfer into NPL at some point. Is there anything you can add to what's going on with the grade 12 bucket that sort of put my mind at rest? Thanks.
Again, there's no particular sort of one issue there. I think the process that we've now got on grade 12 accounts, so, you know, the same could be a problem, then we will get all over them. I mean, if you look at the increase, it's what, 280 or so on the grade 12. And the gross non-performing 150, so 430 annualizes to about 1.5 billion, so still below the sort of run rate on the LIs. So you know, it just bobbles around. It's lots of small components, a little bit sort of, you know, commodity related, as we've said before, but nothing particular that I draw out on it.
Okay, lovely. Thanks a lot.
Your next question comes from the line of Manus Costello from Autonomous. Please ask your question.
Oh, morning all. Just a couple from me, please. Just back on this theme of revenues, your pre-provision profit has been remarkably stable for the first three quarters of the year. But if I annualise your revenue number, you're at about 13.7 for this year. Consensus has got you about 14.3 for next year, for 17. So my question is, do you think that 14.3 is achievable? And if not, would you look at reloading on additional cost programs to get the pre-provision profit moving higher again rather than just stabilising? And just secondly, as a follow-up on IFRS 9, Basel put out a paper recently suggesting that the capital impact was going to be phased in. Andy, do you think that would influence your thinking about whether or not this is significant enough to stop resumption of dividends?
Yeah, okay. So let's just take those. I mean, obviously we're not sort of forward projecting income, as you well know. What the investment we are putting in has clearly been to seek areas where, with better system, better process, we can eke out a little bit more income. The fact that we have pumped up the investment spend is absolutely focused upon that. It does take some time, and there is clearly a lag between starting or the decision to make the investment, actually making the investment, and then seeing the flow through to income. So we are certainly, I think we're doing everything we can be doing to make those investments and to be very targeted in terms of things that are the most likely to help us to get the trajectory on the income up over the coming quarters. IFRS 9, you're right, there's a paper that sort of says maybe there should be some transitional arrangement. It's a sort of curious one because without knowing quite what the core numbers are, we don't know, you know, quite what the benefit of transition will be. I guess as I said, sometimes the transitional people will go to the endpoint anyway and will judge things sort of more on the endpoint, even if there is a phasing in. I think, you know, when we come to the end of the year and we look at dividend, we will see where we, you know, where we have got to on the collective of IFRS 9, phase-in Basel 4, overlap of Basel 4 with IFRS 9, et cetera, et cetera. Plus, of course, the business trajectory, the business momentum, not unimportantly, as we sort of start to form a view as to what's the best thing to do.
Okay. Just to come back on that initial point. If we're still looking ex levy at a pre-provision profit level of sort of 1.1 in the quarter for Q4, and it's not looking like those investments are gonna lead to a revenue pickup by the end of this year, is there more you can do on cost? Can we expect you to get things moving on cost, or do we have to sit and wait for the market to help that revenue environment improve?
We've got the costs running now at a sort of chunk lower than where they were at this time last year, and I think that is big progress. You know our history of sort of absolute reduction in cost, that has not been huge. This is the year when we are absolutely reducing the cost. What we're trying to do is to get the balance of not overly pulling the cost lever in the sense that it will reduce the prospect of getting the income pick up. Conversely, if the income isn't there, then to your question, we need to be very thoughtful about the cost. Our primary focus at the moment is being tight on the cost and getting the investment in, because we do believe, as we said last November and since then, there are some parts of the business that actually do need more investment in there. And just, you know, just trying to walk that sort of tightrope.
Manus, if I could just add, we've got no aversion to taking a healthy look at our expenses as we, as I think as we demonstrated over the past year. If we thought that the strategy that we were pursuing and the investments that we're making were not going to generate the kind of trends in profitability that we set out pretty clearly over the past year, then we would be looking at cost. We'd be looking at making strategy adjustments as well. But we continue to believe that the investments that we have made and are continuing to make can generate the kind of income improvement and you know, that dropping to the bottom line that's consistent with what we've laid out a year ago and then 3 months ago. So not at all averse to taking a continuous look at expenses if we feel like the circumstances have changed. But for the time being, it feels pretty good to play out the investment themes where we're getting some traction.
Got it. Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Chris Mallis from Morgan Stanley. Please ask your question.
Good morning, Bill. Good morning, Andy. So two questions, if I may. The first one was on maybe just a little bit to delve into what's going on in Hong Kong. It seems like you actually had a good trading performance there in the second quarter. Maybe you could give us a little bit of an indication of what's happening with sort of volume growth, margins. Yeah, it did look like to us that there's a bit more a step up in competition in the mortgage market there. So maybe just a little bit more color would be really helpful. And the second one was about capital again. So I guess that your Pillar 2A has stepped up. So your systemic reference point for your stress test, by my calculation, would be about 7.1%. Last year in the test, you had a 5.4% drawdown in the test. So that would mean that, you know, to keep your head above water, you would need to be at least 12.5%. And that's assuming that the test doesn't get tougher. As I understand it, this year's test is actually harsher on China. So can you run us through your thinking of the 12-13% in relationship to that stress test buffer and your systemic reference points as well? Because that actually looks to me like that might start to become the binding constraint for you. Thank you.
So Hong Kong performance, I think, has, you know, after a few quarters where it has been a bit more challenged, I think we've had a good performance during the period. Clearly, there have been more sort of challenges in the residential sort of mortgage market, but overall, I think we have held share there. I think we're doing fine. I think there's confidence in the business. So I think the Hong Kong engine is firing strongly. I mean, it's very difficult.
Sorry, Andy. What's to offset the pressure in the mortgage market in Hong Kong? Just so we know what's going well for you.
Mostly, it's new account opens. So we've got some very successful partnerships, most notably with an Asia Miles promotion, It's an exclusive partnership. It led to an absolute surge in new account volumes. The promotional drive is around multi-product relationships. So they're high quality new accounts. So we picked up share in key areas. We've left behind us a little bit of the headwind that we felt as a result of the RMB depreciation and concerns about further depreciation early in the year, which really suppressed a lot of the wealth activity, which is getting back to a normal trend. So it's good, healthy business flows on the back of some good strategic partnerships, offsetting a clearly increased level of competition in some key subsets of the market.
Super, that's encouraging.
So, Chris, on your second question, I mean, it's obviously difficult to comment when we are mid-flow on a stress test review, and clearly, you know, it's at a point where we have no idea what the outcome of that will be. I think the fact that we have taken, as you well know, some pretty significant steps on capital strengthening, both in November last year with what we've issued in August this year, we have been doing a lot of RWA management, et cetera. Every year test has got slightly different nuances to it, and we will see when the results of this come out later in the year as to where we stand. But I think generally what we have done, what we're doing on the liquidation portfolio realization, what we're doing in AT1 issuance and so on, I think is putting us in a pretty reasonable space, and that should carry us through, I think, okay.
Okay, so you've actually got less assets that are vulnerable to stress, as it were. So your more vulnerable assets you've managed down. That means.
Well, certainly the liquidation portfolio progress we've made.
Yeah, exactly.
In that regard, quite a lot. Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense. Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Martin Leitgeb from Goldman Sachs. Please ask your question.
Yes, good morning. My first question is just whether you could provide a little bit more color on transaction banking, specifically trade and cash management. And I was more looking for some steer in terms of where you think margins and both margins and balances are going to go over the next couple of quarters in that field. As I sort of pointed out, we have seen some stability and a slight pickup recently, whether you expect that trend to continue. And then two just clarifications. One is, I was wondering if you could call out what your sterling cost base is and whether the recent devaluation of the sterling would lead to a revision in terms of how you think about costs in absolute terms, in dollar terms going forward. And lastly, I might have missed it. I just wanted to cross-check with you again whether the third quarter impairment figure benefited from some specific write-backs in relation to an NPL reduction, or whether you expect such a write-back to come through in the fourth quarter. Thank you.
So let me just pick those up. Sorry, and then just come back to your third question just to clarify in a second. So on the sort of transaction banking side, we have had, compared with the previous quarter, the trade income in total is pretty much flat. In fact, it's almost exactly flat. And I'd say actually both volumes and margins have been pretty similar in both periods. So not sort of a lot to talk about there. The cash side is up, about 17, 18 million, so 4 or 5%. And that is actually a slight increase both in volumes and margins. So not huge on either, but the collective of the two together has been pretty good. I think both of those being steady, and they're obviously a very core part of the business, is encouraging. Forward projecting, of course, is always very difficult to do in these spaces, but certainly those are the trends as we see them at the moment. UK cost base really is not particularly consequential in terms of the group overall, so the FX impact of or consequential upon Brexit and things like that, I would not think will be anything to be too concerned by. Martin, can you just go back to your third question?
Yeah, I was just wondering whether the impairment figure we saw in the third quarter, whether that benefited to any extent on specific write-backs on certain provisions you took previously, or I think the press reported that you might get a certain write-back on a repayment of a non-performing loan, I think it was in India, and whether we should expect such a figure to come through potentially in the fourth quarter.
Yes, I saw the press speculation. I would just observe that we've been pretty comfortable actually, that we've marked things fairly accurately so far, and there are no particular write-backs that have either occurred or that we are sitting here, certainly by way of any material amount that we are expecting going forward. The views we took in November last year so far are there or thereabouts coming good.
Thank you very much.
Your next question comes from the line of Joseph Dickerson from Jefferies. Please ask your question.
Hi, good morning, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call. Could you just talk about trade finance and some of the industry trends that are happening there between volume and margin? Are you still seeing pressure on margin, notably, say, from Japanese competitors? Just if you give us some flavor for the backdrop in which you're operating in trade finance, that would be very helpful. Thanks.
I mean, not a huge amount to say there. As I said in the previous, we have overall seen margins actually fairly stable. And obviously, you know, there's some parts that will be slightly down, some parts will be slightly up, but there's nothing particular to pick out there. Trade values have been quite consistent with what we saw in the second quarter. Obviously, there's a dependence there to some extent on commodity prices and things like that. A lot of the trade that we are financing, or a part of the trade we're financing anything anyway, is sort of commodity related. But overall, I'd say if you look at this almost on a multi-quarter basis, the takeaway on this would be that both volumes and margins have stayed pretty steady.
And just on the competitive, any comment on the competitive outlook or backdrop?
I can chime in a bit. Clearly, there are some there are parts of our footprint where the competition is very severe. So parts of Asia, and certainly when we're competing with Chinese or Japanese banks who are absolutely flush with liquidity, margins are under pressure. But as yet, the penetration of those banks into our markets is far from complete. So we're still able to hold on to our share. The market share is basically flat, having been drifting up for the past couple of years. In some other markets, so most notably Africa, parts of the Middle East, parts of South Asia, we don't feel the same margin pressure. And I think that has to do with a combination of a little bit more pressure on the local banking competitors in those markets, but also the fact that some of the international banks have been pulling away from some of the emerging markets in which we have a really strong position. So, on balance, our utilization of our limits is relatively low, which I think simply reflects the relatively slow pace of volume growth in the markets. So we're holding share. NIMs on balance are okay, and competition is severe in some areas, but actually moving is a bit the other direction in some others. So on balance, we've got a gently improving result.
Thanks.
Your next question comes from the line of David Lock from Deutsche Bank. Please ask your question.
Morning. I had a question on other income, please. I noted you printed 170 million this quarter, and the range over the last sort of six or seven quarters has been between about 70 and 220. Just wondered if there's anything you wanted to call out in this particular quarter, if there's anything non-recurring, either negative or positively, because trying to kind of forecast this line going forward, I've certainly found pretty difficult. I just wondered if you could give us any color on how we should expect that to evolve. Thank you.
I mean, there's not a huge amount to sort of call out on that. It does, as you say, move around from period to period, and I therefore understand entirely why you'd sort of say it's a slightly difficult one to forecast. But, there's a variety of bits and pieces in there, and they sort of move around. But, you know, over the period, we've been in a sort of corridor of 100 to 170 or so fairly regularly over the last several quarters. So, you'll do your own modelling, but it's been broadly in that sort of space.
Okay, thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Sandy Shen from Senkos. Please ask your question.
Morning, gentlemen. I wanted to ask, there was a press report about potential involvement with an aircraft leasing company in China, whereby actually you would work with Chinese banks where they would supply the funding or liquidity, and you would effectively provide the services. I mean, could you comment on if that might be a model for additional fee income moving forward?
We're always looking for ways that we can take some really good franchises that we've got and basically get some more financial or operating leverage or adapt our business model to changing regulations. And, you know, we have a very good aircraft financing and leasing business. We're happy to own planes and lease them. We're happy to finance them. But we're constantly looking at the funding mix, the nature of the partnerships that we can enter into to leverage our core capabilities to get better returns. I don't think there's a single model that that we will move either away from or towards. We've got a pretty eclectic model already. But we've got tons of opportunities, I think, from people around the world that recognize the underlying expertise that we've got together with our ability to put some innovative financing packages together that could also help us to improve our returns. So I'd say this is more ordinary course step outs in terms of our underlying capabilities.
Okay.
I think we have time for go ahead, and then we'll take one more question.
Oh, sorry. And then, just related on that, I mean, should we look at cash management and custody income as one of those areas that you might want to focus, either expanding the client base for or really expanding the reach of your existing product range?
Yes, broadly. Security services, custody is a relatively small business line for us today, but we operate in a number of typically smaller markets where we have a really differentiated offering. As you know, that's a scale business. We've been increasing our share in our markets substantially, and we'll look to continue to increase our share so that we can get those scale benefits in the markets where we have a real edge. Cash management is a core business for us, and I think we're very well penetrated within our client footprint, but nowhere near as well penetrated as we think we can be. So this has been a big area of focus for us. As, for example, within our commercial banking area, we've really focused on helping clients both in our CNIB and the commercial bank to work with each other, so financing our large clients' ecosystem and their distribution and supply chains. So cash management is at the heart of that, obviously, together with trade and ongoing financing. So we've got a good business. We've got a capability that's differentiated and complete, and we know that we can increase our share through focus.
All right. Thank you.
We have time for one more question.
And your final question comes from the line of Peter Toman from HSBC. Please ask your question.
Morning. I wanted to ask you about the corporate finance bit where the revenue fell about $50 million this quarter. I just wondered, you were trying to reprice a low margin corporate lending, and I wondered if that might prove less successful than you anticipated, whether drop off corporate finance revenue over the course of the 5-month period sort of reflect this strategy of trying to reprice corporate.
Corporate finance results are going to be very lumpy quarter to quarter in any case, so I wouldn't read too much into one quarter's trend. The pipeline for our corporate finance business is healthy at this point, as it was at the half year, and obviously some deals will flow from one quarter to the next. Broadly, though, your point, of course, is correct. As we focused on returns in this business, we have focused on returns in every business, we have moved away from business that we didn't where we didn't see relationships, of which the corporate finance transaction is one part. I didn't see relationships generating an adequate return. So that has been a contributor to the outright decrease in the size of our balance sheet, the risk-weighted assets, the improvement in capital, et cetera. But it's come at the expense of income to some extent in the corporate finance area. Maybe the underlying question, though, is do we think that we can continue to have a profitable and successful corporate finance business? The question is, the answer is unambiguously yes. We've got a very good position in the markets in which we operate. We've done a very high proportion of the One Belt, One Road related transactions, which is a testament to our competence in China, our competence in Africa, South Asia, the Middle East, our knowledge of infrastructure broadly, our knowledge of complicated financing structures that involve multilateral agencies, export credit agencies, et cetera. And, you know, that will drive our corporate finance business. as one example, in the months and years ahead. So we remain optimistic about the business. Wouldn't read too much into the lumpiness of quarter-to-quarter flows. So with that, I'd like to thank you all again for taking the time and interest to spend this time with us. It does feel like we've made a lot of progress, but by the same token, of course, we're very focused now on translating that progress and the strength that we think we've been able to generate into growth and bottom-line profits. That is the singular focus of every one of us in the management team. It's what we're spending all of our time focusing on. We're not going to lose focus on the risk discipline and capital strength, et cetera, but we think that that's reasonably ingrained in our business mindset at this point. Andy and I will not remove the focus, but we are very much shifting our focus back out, back into the hearts and minds of our clients, leveraging this very good set of client relationships and franchise that we've got. Maybe a quick update on other things. I would like to welcome Jose Vinales, who has started at the bank. He will attend his first board meeting with all of us in Africa next week, and we'll take the reins officially on December 1st. So I'd like to take this opportunity again to thank Sir John Peace for his enormous contribution to the bank and for the real support that he showed me in my year and a bit in the bank. So thank you again for taking the time. We look forward to speaking to you again next year on February 24th when we release our full year results.